University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Session 2010. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you're doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Where will the visitors go during the first part of their visit?
Listen, everyone. Your exchange partners are coming here to stay from the 12th to the 22nd of July. For the first 5 days, it'll still be term time, so your guests will have to come into school and join in our lessons. When the holidays begin on the 17th, we'll all meet each day for trips together. Any questions? Listen, everyone. Your exchange partners are coming here to stay from the 12th to the 22nd of July. For the first 5 days, it'll still be term time, so your guests will have to come into school and join in our lessons. When the holidays begin on the 17th, we'll all meet each day for trips together. Any questions?
Question 2. What might the friends put on the top of the cake? Give 2 details.
I found a recipe for a lovely celebration cake. It says it serves 8 people. Let's make it for our end of exams party on Wednesday.
OK. Read me the ingredients so that I can write us out a shopping list.
A packet of flour, 4 eggs, vanilla sugar and some butter. We'll also need some chocolate to spread over the top of the cake, or if you prefer, we could use cream instead. I found a recipe for a lovely celebration cake. It says it serves 8 people. Let's make it for our end of exams party on Wednesday.
OK. Read me the ingredients so that I can write us out a shopping list.
A packet of flour, 4 eggs, vanilla sugar and some butter. We'll also need some chocolate to spread over the top of the cake, or if you prefer, we could use cream instead.
Question 3. Where exactly is Tiana's accommodation for her overnight journey to be found?
I would like to buy a ticket for the Chennai to Mumbai overnight train, please.
Here you are. Carriage number 4. Your bed number is 48X.
I would like to buy a ticket for the Chennai to Mumbai overnight train, please.
Here you are. Carriage number 4. Your bed number is 48X.
Question 4. What is the reduction offered in the High Street sale?
Do you need to buy new pens and pencils? There is a stationery sale in the High Street.
Yes, I do need some new pens. How much are the sale items?
The sign says that everything is 1/3 of the original price. I've already bought a pen reduced from £6 to £2.
What a bargain!
Do you need to buy new pens and pencils? There is a stationery sale in the High Street.
Yes, I do need some new pens. How much are the sale items?
The sign says that everything is 1/3 of the original price. I've already bought a pen reduced from £6 to £2.
What a bargain!
Question 5. Where and when will the orchestra appear on television?
Don't forget that at the weekend, it's the International Youth Music Competition. Make sure your uniforms are washed, clean and tidy, and that your instruments are polished ready to tune, as we have to meet here at college by 7 a.m. Our orchestra is first on stage in the competition at 9 o'clock, but your parents can watch you later on Channel 20 at 10:30. Don't forget that at the weekend, it's the International Youth Music Competition. Make sure your uniforms are washed, clean and tidy, and that your instruments are polished ready to tune, as we have to meet here at college by 7 a.m. Our orchestra is first on stage in the competition at 9 o'clock, but your parents can watch you later on Channel 20 at 10:30.
Question 6. After the steps, what are the directions to the waterfall? Give 2 details.
Excuse me. We are trying to find our way to the waterfall. Is it anywhere near here, please?
Yes, but it's far below you. Go along this winding path and then down the steps ahead of you, leading into the valley. Watch out, because they're often muddy and slippery.
Ooh.
Walk along beside the river in the valley, and as you go round the bend, you'll see the waterfall, but you'll hear it first.
Oh. Excuse me. We are trying to find our way to the waterfall. Is it anywhere near here, please?
Yes, but it's far below you. Go along this winding path and then down the steps ahead of you, leading into the valley. Watch out, because they're often muddy and slippery.
Ooh.
Walk along beside the river in the valley, and as you go round the bend, you'll see the waterfall, but you'll hear it first.
Oh.
That is the last of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview about a mobile banking service for rural communities and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to Country Matters. Today we are joined by a bank employee who carries out a great and necessary service for those who live in remote and rural areas. She brings a bank to their doorstep. A bank on wheels. Isn't that correct, Katrina?
Yes, indeed. I've driven the mobile bank every day from 9 to 5, except for weekends and bank holidays, for the 3 years since the service started. This is my job, and I love it. It's varied and interesting, and no 2 days are ever the same, so I can't get bored.
It must be lovely to be out in the open air and to be able to see different landscapes each day.
Yes, the scenery in my mobile area is stunning. My driving routes are mainly coastal, so each day I'm treated to sea breezes, I hear seagulls call, and I can choose whether to stop to eat my lunch on top of a cliff, under a shady row of trees, or by the beach.
Wonderful. We would all like to have your job. You must cover a huge distance in your van.
Yes, about 500 kilometres each week. I usually have the help of a colleague. She helps me with the actual banking, but I do most of the driving from place to place.
There must be lots more advantages to your job.
Oh, yes. You see, we have a sort of planned route whereby we make 13 scheduled stops each week, always in the same place, at a crossroads perhaps, by the village shop, or in a seafront car park. This provides a much-needed service to people, almost a lifeline for them. Without us, these customers would have to travel miles to their nearest bank at great expense to them.
Your customers must really appreciate you. Do they mark your visits on their calendars?
They do. And in return, of course, we get to know them all personally and are able to take an interest in their lives. Often we are the first people a customer has spoken to for a few days. Our unique job is very important for our rural customers socially, as well as for business. Luckily, our bank recognises and encourages our caring sort of role here.
Do customers ever just come to talk to you, even if they don't need to carry out any banking business?
Yes, they often look into the van to greet us, even if they have no need of our banking services.
You really do provide a very good service to the communities you visit.
Yes. For example, our customers can pay bills, draw out cash, arrange for insurance, and collect money in other currencies if they need this for overseas travel.
Do you do request stops?
Oh, yes. In the summer, we often stop our van in tourist car parks where customers wave at us to stop. The holiday makers often photograph us because they have never seen a mobile bank before.
Yes, they're used to mobile grocers and mobile libraries, perhaps, but not banks.
I love being in the van. Usually, of course, I would be trapped in a bank office all day. I'm constantly aware of this and try always to provide service with a grateful smile.
Are there some days in winter when you can't go out in the van?
We experience ice on the roads and strong winds in winter here, so I often have to hang on to the steering wheel tightly. But generally, we manage to go out every day. Hot summer days are the most difficult for us. The van gets very hot very quickly. Whatever the weather, though, our regular customers are still waiting for us, and this really encourages us. We run a vital service and they appreciate it.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello, and welcome to Country Matters. Today we are joined by a bank employee who carries out a great and necessary service for those who live in remote and rural areas. She brings a bank to their doorstep, a bank on wheels. Isn't that correct, Katrina?
Yes, indeed. I've driven the mobile bank every day from 9 to 5, except for weekends and bank holidays, for the 3 years since the service started. This is my job, and I love it. It's varied and interesting, and no 2 days are ever the same, so I can't get bored.
It must be lovely to be out in the open air and to be able to see different landscapes each day.
Yes, the scenery in my mobile area is stunning. My driving routes are mainly coastal, so each day I'm treated to sea breezes, I hear seagulls call, and I can choose whether to stop to eat my lunch on top of a cliff, under a shady row of trees, or by the beach.
Wonderful. We would all like to have your job. You must cover a huge distance in your van.
Yes, about 500 kilometres each week. I usually have the help of a colleague. She helps me with the actual banking, but I do most of the driving from place to place.
There must be lots more advantages to your job.
Oh, yes. You see, we have a sort of planned route whereby we make 13 scheduled stops each week, always in the same place, at a crossroads perhaps, by the village shop, or in a seafront car park. This provides a much-needed service to people, almost a lifeline for them. Without us, these customers would have to travel miles to their nearest bank at great expense to them.
Your customers must really appreciate you. Do they mark your visits on their calendars?
They do. And in return, of course, we get to know them all personally and are able to take an interest in their lives. Often we are the first people a customer has spoken to for a few days. Our unique job is very important for our rural customers socially, as well as for business. Luckily, our bank recognises and encourages our caring sort of role here.
Do customers ever just come to talk to you, even if they don't need to carry out any banking business?
Yes, they often look into the van to greet us, even if they have no need of our banking services.
You really do provide a very good service to the communities you visit.
Yes. For example, our customers can pay bills, draw out cash, arrange for insurance, and collect money in other currencies if they need this for overseas travel.
Do you do request stops?
Oh, yes. In the summer, we often stop our van in tourist car parks where customers wave at us to stop. The holiday makers often photograph us because they have never seen a mobile bank before.
Yes, they're used to mobile grocers and mobile libraries, perhaps, but not banks.
I love being in the van. Usually, of course, I would be trapped in a bank office all day. I'm constantly aware of this and try always to provide service with a grateful smile.
Are there some days in winter when you can't go out in the van?
We experience ice on the roads and strong winds in winter here, so I often have to hang on to the steering wheel tightly. But generally, we manage to go out every day. Hot summer days are the most difficult for us. The van gets very hot very quickly. Whatever the weather, though, our regular customers are still waiting for us, and this really encourages us. We run a vital service and they appreciate it.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about a prize-winning toy and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
In our computerized, digital text messaging world, we have refreshing news today. Following worldwide research, it's been revealed that our favorite children's toy is not electronic. The winner is the humble plastic building brick. You probably have some in your house. Those little bricks which fit together to make models. Today's result is the same as 50 years ago in 1960. Here is a project leader from the Danish manufacturer of these bricks to tell us more.
Thank you. We are very pleased with the results of this extensive research. We are delighted to confirm that our bricks remain as popular today as they have done since they were first launched.
When was that?
We began by making wooden building bricks. That was in 1934. Then we turned to making plastic bricks, which would fit together to make models, in 1949. By 1963, we had perfected this.
You must have made a lot of bricks since then.
We make 20 million little plastic bricks each year. Statisticians tell us we have made enough bricks for everyone in the world to own 60 of them.
Well, I don't own any. Someone else must have my 60 brick quota.
Of course, some families probably own 6,000 of our bricks, or even 60,000 perhaps, if they have been collecting them for a long time.
Do you still make the bricks on your original factory site?
Yes. Our production has always been from the same original place. My family built the factory on our lands all that time ago. We have kept the company within our own family. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, myself, and now my son have all taken part over the years.
How have you kept your product so popular when there are so many new items competing for children's interest? Games, computers, robots?
We produce catalogues, newsletters, a free children's magazine with up-to-date news of new models, and we have even opened theme parks. We also rely very much on customer satisfaction and hope they will recommend our products to their friends.
What other reasons are there for your continuing popularity?
We try to link new sets of bricks with the themes of popular films. Many parents buy these packs for their children as they think it encourages imaginative role play, which it does, of course. Children love reenacting scenarios with our little superhero plastic models.
But you have always produced those lovely, plain, brightly coloured bricks too, haven't you?
Of course. These encourage generation after generation of children to think, play, and create things for themselves. Even our logo, when translated into English, means play well.
Are your bricks only for children, or do adult builders buy them too?
Actually, there are many adult enthusiasts around the world. They build ambitious models, then meet for conferences and display their designs. Often they have made their garage, attic space or garden shed into a design studio. Some of our products are very sophisticated. For example, our animation and our robotic packages. And these appeal especially to the adult market.
A famous architect once said that architecture began when two bricks were put together, and you certainly have helped many generations to do that. I hope your success will last for many future generations too.
Now you will hear the interview again.
In our computerised, digital, text messaging world, we have refreshing news today. Following worldwide research, it's been revealed that our favourite children's toy is not electronic. The winner is the humble plastic building brick. You probably have some in your house. Those little bricks which fit together to make models. Today's result is the same as 50 years ago in 1960. Here is a project leader from the Danish manufacturer of these bricks to tell us more.
Thank you. We are very pleased with the results of this extensive research. We are delighted to confirm that our bricks remain as popular today as they have done since they were first launched.
When was that?
We began by making wooden building bricks. That was in 1934. Then we turned to making plastic bricks, which would fit together to make models, in 1949. By 1963, we had perfected this.
You must have made a lot of bricks since then.
We make 20 million little plastic bricks each year. Statisticians tell us we have made enough bricks for everyone in the world to own 60 of them.
Well, I don't own any. Someone else must have my 60 brick quota.
Of course, some families probably own 6,000 of our bricks, or even 60,000 perhaps, if they have been collecting them for a long time.
Do you still make the bricks on your original factory site?
Yes. Our production has always been from the same original place. My family built the factory on our lands all that time ago. We have kept the company within our own family. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, myself, and now my son have all taken part over the years.
How have you kept your product so popular when there are so many new items competing for children's interest? Games, computers, robots?
We produce catalogues, newsletters, a free children's magazine with up-to-date news of new models, and we have even opened theme parks. We also rely very much on customer satisfaction and hope they will recommend our products to their friends.
What other reasons are there for your continuing popularity?
We try to link new sets of bricks with the themes of popular films. Many parents buy these packs for their children as they think it encourages imaginative role play, which it does, of course. Children love reenacting scenarios with our little superhero plastic models.
But you have always produced those lovely, plain, brightly coloured bricks too, haven't you?
Of course. These encourage generation after generation of children to think, play, and create things for themselves. Even our logo, when translated into English, means play well.
Are your bricks only for children, or do adult builders buy them too?
Actually, there are many adult enthusiasts around the world. They build ambitious models, then meet for conferences and display their designs. Often they have made their garage, attic space or garden shed into a design studio. Some of our products are very sophisticated. For example, our animation and our robotic packages. And these appeal especially to the adult market.
A famous architect once said that architecture began when two bricks were put together, and you certainly have helped many generations to do that. I hope your success will last for many future generations too.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following interview about the benefits of singing and then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening and welcome to Music Time. Today we're looking at the benefits of singing. And Harrod Williams has been researching this subject and is here to talk to us.
Yes, throughout history, singing has made people feel good. If you think about it, we all sing happily and naturally for the first few months of our lives, while our voices find their own pitch. We use this to meet our needs as a baby. Later, young children often sing to themselves as they play contentedly.
And some of us carry on with this as we get older, don't we? We sing as we wake up, or in the bath or shower, or even while we work. I remember a very famous singer saying that the only thing better than singing is more singing. What do you make of that?
Quite so. And the whole process of singing brings with it more benefits. The director of a famous breakfast cereal firm said in 1931 that singing promotes health by helping breathing, circulation, and digestion.
That was nearly 80 years ago.
Yes, and the strange thing is, he was right. If you suffer from asthma or any breathing difficulties, then singing helps you to relax and opens up your airways, giving you more control over how you breathe.
I know that many universities are researching this now.
Yes, even governments all over the world acknowledge the health benefits in singing and are pouring money into projects to get children to sing.
And one university is trying to get singing paid for as therapy by its national health system, isn't it?
Yes. They studied 12,000 people who had been ill and then began to sing, maybe as part of a choir or just at home by themselves. Often the singing helped the patients to recover after strokes or heart attacks.
Again, that's because of the breathing benefits of singing.
Singing encourages you to take more oxygen into your body, and this leads to increased alertness. Better airflow in your chest should also lessen the possibility of bacteria there and reduce the risks of colds and flu.
You mean it blows the germs away?
I think so. But it's more than just the physical aspect of singing which helps us.
I know. Psychologically, singing makes us feel happy and content. It lifts the spirits.
So people feel better generally. Some cultures sing as part of their care or healing process. There's a huge link between music and medicine. It's even been suggested that group singing can help patients to deal with pain.
Well, think of a football crowd. They all sing together, don't they? And it generates excitement and enjoyment.
Some cultures sing together in order just to get through the day.
A song helps with daily tasks.
It does. Unfortunately, though, many of us have lost this natural desire to sing to our babies or as a family around the piano, or even to mark moments of celebration or sorrow. We need to encourage and reinstate these traditions in our everyday lives.
Singing happy birthday together, for example.
Yes. Researchers say that if you sing even as little as once a month, it'll help you physically and emotionally in life.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening and welcome to Music Time. Today we're looking at the benefits of singing. and Harrod Williams has been researching this subject and is here to talk to us.
Yes, throughout history, singing has made people feel good. If you think about it, we all sing happily and naturally for the first few months of our lives, while our voices find their own pitch. We use this to meet our needs as a baby. Later, young children often sing to themselves as they play contentedly.
And some of us carry on with this as we get older, don't we?
Hmm.
We sing as we wake up, or in the bath or shower, or even while we work. I remember a very famous singer saying that the only thing better than singing is more singing. What do you make of that?
Quite so. And the whole process of singing brings with it more benefits. The director of a famous breakfast cereal firm said in 1931 that singing promotes health by helping breathing, circulation, and digestion.
That was nearly 80 years ago.
Yes, and the strange thing is, he was right. If you suffer from asthma or any breathing difficulties, then singing helps you to relax and opens up your airways, giving you more control over how you breathe.
I know that many universities are researching this now.
Yes, even governments all over the world acknowledge the health benefits in singing and are pouring money into projects to get children to sing.
And one university is trying to get singing paid for as therapy by its national health system, isn't it?
Yes. They studied 12,000 people who had been ill and then began to sing, maybe as part of a choir or just at home by themselves. Often the singing helped the patients to recover after strokes or heart attacks.
Again, that's because of the breathing benefits of singing.
Singing encourages you to take more oxygen into your body, and this leads to increased alertness. Better airflow in your chest should also lessen the possibility of bacteria there and reduce the risks of colds and flu.
You mean it blows the germs away?
I think so. But it's more than just the physical aspect of singing which helps us.
I know. Psychologically, singing makes us feel happy and content. It lifts the spirits.
So people feel better generally. Some cultures sing as part of their care or healing process. There's a huge link between music and medicine. It's even been suggested that group singing can help patients to deal with pain.
Well, think of a football crowd. They all sing together, don't they? And it generates excitement and enjoyment.
Some cultures sing together in order just to get through the day.
A song helps with daily tasks.
It does. Unfortunately, though, many of us have lost this natural desire to sing to our babies or as a family around the piano, or even to mark moments of celebration or sorrow. We need to encourage and reinstate these traditions in our everyday lives.
Singing happy birthday together, for example.
Yes. Researchers say that if you sing even as little as once a month, it'll help you physically and emotionally in life.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment, you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about the disappearance of nomadic lifestyles in the desert, and then answer the questions below. You will hear the talk twice.
More than 3,000 years ago, nomadic peoples began the tradition of travelling and moving their homes from place to place in the desert. Now, unfortunately, it looks as if the journeys of these desert dwellers could finally be at an end. Development in the world has led to building on many desert borders. Security restrictions mean that nomads are not free to roam, live, and graze their animals where they wish anymore. Global climate change, which causes extremes in temperature, also contributes to the suffering of the nomads. In particular, drought is forcing the nomadic lifestyle out of existence, and it is feared that within a generation, nomads will be no more. Lack of rainfall, especially over the last 3 years, has reduced grazing grounds for the goats and sheep which belong to the surviving 280,000 nomadic tribesmen. Traditionally, the tribes would move on to better pastures when the current area is exhausted by their grazing flocks. Nowadays, however, there are increasingly fewer green areas in the desert, and those that are there are often built upon by settlers and become small desert towns, so the nomads are unable to move their flocks to these occupied oases anymore. Previous generations lived a true nomadic life, but the freedom of movement for nomads today is virtually finished. Some of the desert nomads have tried to carry on their way of life by buying processed feed for their animals, but food prices are rising fast, and they need to be able to graze their flocks as before. The government wants these tribes to settle into towns. Settling, however, is not understood or accepted in nomadic culture. Nomadic tribes have always been known for their hospitality, their camels, and their heavy cloth tents and robes. They are a symbol of vibrant life, courage, and perseverance in the harshness of the desert. Historians say there is actually evidence of such tribes as far back as the 11th century BC. Even those desert nomads who have lived for a while in settlements and have learned about the modernized world still want to preserve the nomadic way of life in the future for their families. The International Red Cross warns that this very special way of life, which has survived wars, famines, and disasters for thousands of years, is under threat. Desert nomad tribes need improved access to water and grazing areas fast, or they could disappear forever.
Now you will hear the talk again.
More than 3,000 years ago, nomadic peoples began the tradition of travelling and moving their homes from place to place in the desert. Now, unfortunately, it looks as if the journeys of these desert dwellers could finally be at an end. Development in the world has led to building on many desert borders. Security restrictions mean that nomads are not free to roam, live, and graze their animals where they wish anymore. Global climate change, which causes extremes in temperature, also contributes to the suffering of the nomads. In particular, drought is forcing the nomadic lifestyle out of existence, and it is feared that within a generation, nomads will be no more. Lack of rainfall, especially over the last 3 years, has reduced grazing grounds for the goats and sheep which belong to the surviving 280,000 nomadic tribesmen. Traditionally, the tribes would move on to better pastures when the current area is exhausted by their grazing flocks. Nowadays, however, there are increasingly fewer green areas in the desert, and those that are there are often built upon by settlers and become small desert towns, so the nomads are unable to move their flocks to these occupied oases anymore. Previous generations lived a true nomadic life, but the freedom of movement for nomads today is virtually finished. Some of the desert nomads have tried to carry on their way of life by buying processed feed for their animals, but food prices are rising fast, and they need to be able to graze their flocks as before. The government wants these tribes to settle into towns. Settling, however, is not understood or accepted in nomadic culture. Nomadic tribes have always been known for their hospitality, their camels, and their heavy cloth tents and robes. They are a symbol of vibrant life, courage, and perseverance in the harshness of the desert. Historians say there is actually evidence of such tribes as far back as the 11th century BC. Even those desert nomads who have lived for a while in settlements and have learned about the modernized world still want to preserve the nomadic way of life in the future for their families. The International Red Cross warns that this very special way of life, which has survived wars, famines, and disasters for thousands of years, is under threat. Desert nomad tribes need improved access to water and grazing areas fast, or they could disappear forever.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.